Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time to take you behind the scenes in Smashville.
Cuts across, he scores!
This is the Preds official podcast with Thomas Willis and Brooks Bratton.
That powerful move from back of the net.
On Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
It's the POP, otherwise known as the Predators official podcast, presented by Two Rivers Ford here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app and your favorite podcast service. It's us, the Gingers, Brooks Bratton and Thomas Willis of NashvillePredators.com, joining you virtually. Producer Max pressing buttons at the studio. We're home again. Thomas enjoying some lunch. I'm doing some laundry. We are multitasking here on episode 117. It's always better to be in person, but honestly, that's one of the perks of being able to sit at home and do this on our laptops is we can get stuff done.
Well, that's true. It also says that this episode will certainly be an unmitigated disaster because when I try to multitask,
Well, My dryer went off just before we started, so we will not have to deal with any buzzing. So that
is good. That's great, actually.
The jeans are done. We're good to go. And we're ready to go on this episode of the pod as well. We're glad you're with us and much to discuss. Of course, the Predators bounce back with two straight wins over Chicago after a tough go of things in Dallas. So how did the Preds turn things around after two losses in Dallas? We will discuss that more in a moment. Also, I was with the team in Dallas. So what is life like on the road these days? It's a bit different than we're used to. I'll touch on some of the details there. Also, we're going to be joined by our boss, Predators President Sean Henry is going to give us a call. Always enjoy having him on the pod. So plenty of insight to come there and also getting to your Twitter questions as per usual. And Thomas, what a difference a few days can make. We're leaving Dallas. We're bummed out. Nobody's happy. The Predators lose 7-0 and 3-2 against the Stars in two games there at American Airlines Center, including giving up 8 power play goals in two games. All of a sudden, they come back home and they beat the Blackhawks on consecutive nights at Bridgestone Arena, 3-2 in overtime on Tuesday and 2-1 in a shootout on Wednesday. And we say it all the time, if you don't like your result one night, just wait a couple nights and chances are you'll have a better one.
And because of our recording schedule, which was earlier than normal, we recorded on a Wednesday. We released the episode on a Friday just before those two Stars games. It led to more listener comments of evaluating of what we'd said. For example, I mentioned that it would probably be a low-scoring game because that's how the last 10 or so Stars and Preds games have been. I commented back to say, you know, there was only one 5-on-5 goal allowed by the Predators, you know, that entire weekend. But the problem was that they allowed like 9 other special teams goals. So yeah, that was a bit of a low point. I think we definitely missed on that perspective. We did get Mikhail Granlund's debut. We weren't sure at the time of that. We also actually got Lucas Pisa's debut. We interviewed him, and I think in our minds, it was like, okay, it'll probably be a few days, you know, till we see him on the ice. But we saw him debut in Dallas as well. Yeah, not a lot to like from Texas. And it all primarily goes back to special teams because you can construct a narrative of, in the first game, the Predators might have even been the better team in the first period, but then the second period happens. The 5-on-3 happens quickly as well. It's 5-0 Dallas after 40 minutes. And then similarly, the Predators had a little bit more offense, had a bit more drive in the rematch on Sunday. They scored 2 goals, one of them late from Granlund to cut the deficit from 3-1 to 3-2. And yet they lose because they allow 3 more power play goals. So, and we can talk special teams more in a moment. I think there's things to like about it and how aggressive it is and its change, but then no question that that is why the Stars had Nashville's number this weekend. And so you mentioned it feels a lot better to go into extra time twice against Chicago in a 48-hour span and get wins, one in overtime, one in the shootout. And I think right now, so far the season has played out about where the Predators need to be or where you might think that they would be ranking the opponents. I think we're going to come back time and time again about being in the top 4 of this central division out of these 8 teams. And so far, I think we talked about this with Elliot Friedman 2 weeks ago on who did he think maybe was better than, where would he rank the Central Division teams? And he said, well, you know, you probably need to be better than Columbus. You need to be better than Chicago. You'll definitely need to be better than Detroit. And then the other question is, are you better than a Carolina? Are you better than a Dallas? Like, where will that rank? And so we've seen the Predators take care, beat the teams they need to beat in Columbus and Chicago. We only got one matchup against Carolina. That one will be very curious to see who's four, who's five potentially in that division. And then, yeah, I mean, right now, Dallas is the defending Western Conference champions, and they played like it. I think you would have thought going to the game, they hadn't played yet. So could they be sloppy? Could they be not as polished? You maybe saw some of that in the first period, but then I think you saw the freshness of the Stars having not played any games. The Predators had played, you know, three plus at that point, and they took off. So yeah, taking care of business so far, and we'll look ahead to this week. Suddenly, the teams from Florida just don't want to lose. So the Tampa Bay Lightning, the actual defending champs, also in the division, they're up next, two games against them. And then the Florida Panthers recently had a dramatic comeback. Patrick Hornquist scoring, I think he's got four goals already on the young season, tied the game with the extra attacker. They won in overtime to also, they are undefeated as of this recording. So it'll be interesting to see going back to the, in air quotes, Eastern Conference portion of the Central Division to see how the Preds match up there. But like you said, at least we're able to record with a much better feeling getting the extra points in overtime in a shootout against Chicago.
That became a bit of a joke last season that the day that we would record, it seemed that the Predators would always lose the night before, and our listeners would rejoice when the team would win. It was usually a Thursday night. They would finally get a win, and we would have some good things to talk about on Friday when we would usually record. So as you said, good things to talk about now as well. The back-to-back wins over Chicago. Tuesday night, Yakov Trenin gets his first of the season. That line's been doing a pretty good job. He with Brad Richardson and Matthew Olivier for the last couple of games. Mikhail Granlund tied it in the third. He had two goals in two games. And then Roman Josi took over and pots the winner in overtime.
Granlund in across the line. Granlund tried something that was tipped by Strome. Granlund out on the right circle. Leaves the puck. Here is Josi cutting in. Josi slides it in. And the Predators win it overtime. Roman Josi took the feed and tucked it home for the overtime game winner. And it comes at 1:57.
First overtime game of the season for the Predators, the first OT win as well. And Pecorine gets his first win of the season and his first win overall since February 16th of 2020. Almost a full calendar year since Pecorine had recorded a win. So good for him. The guys were pumped to get that for him. He did start that Carolina game back on January 18th. A game that the Predators called at the time their best of the season, weren't able to get the win that night. Pekka does get the win against Chicago on Tuesday, win number 360. And he called it a gutsy win from his team. And the Predators said they learned a lot of lessons after those Dallas games. They stuck with it in game one against Chicago. I think arguably the most complete game of the season. And then Wednesday, we get a 2-1 win in the shootout. Nick Cousins, his first as a member of the Preds, and Matt Duchene, who played in his 800th career game on Wednesday night, he scores the only goal in the shootout.
First shootout of the year for either club. Here's Duchene moving in, hesitating, his backhander, he goes top shelf. And the Predators take a 1-0 lead.
You heard Hal Gill. I think that was a lot of our reactions. That was a pretty move from Matt Duchene. And then UC Saros got the start on Wednesday. He stops all three skaters in the shootout. Predators had 42 shots on goal against Kevin Lankinen, Chicago's goaltender. And again, the Preds liked their effort. It wasn't perfect, but especially after what happened in Texas, I think this is more of what you wanted to see. Yes, they didn't light the world on fire. Yes, they needed extra time in both of these. But I think this is more of what you expect out of this Predators team this season.
Yes, and I think you saw, let's not gloss over the fact that the Preds did go 5 of 6 on the penalty kill against Chicago. And I think the quick comment is, oh, well, Chicago is going to be one of the worst teams. They've lost a lot of talent. True, I won't dispute that. But I also would add,
there's still a team in the NHL.
Well, sure.
I think that's what I always laugh about. Yes, they're not supposed to be one of the best teams, but it's not like you're playing a Pee Wee team.
No, 100%. And you're actually playing a top three power play. So the Blackhawks and the Stars were 1-2 in power play percentage before this little set. They've now fallen to number three. But Chicago scored a power play goal in every one of their games leading in to that Wednesday night game, including Tuesday against the Predators. They converted once for one of their goals in that ultimate overtime loss. So I think you saw some immediate correction and progress there. Now we'll be curious to see what it looks like when Nashville plays Dallas again to see if there's improvement. But you've seen some personnel changes. For example, you saw Mark Borbieski come out. You saw Jared Tenorti come in. That helped the penalty kill a little bit. You saw Matt Binning, who originally was going to sit for Lucas Pisa, now on injured reserve. He comes back in. I noticed an improvement from him. I thought he was excellent in the first few games against Columbus, trailed off, and then he's rebounded a bit against Chicago as well. So I think you see some encouraging signs there. And again, it's going to be a story for the rest of this season, because when you allow eight power play goals in a weekend, I mean, your percentage is going to be low. It's going to be a sore spot. It's going to be a challenge. But even on this show over the years, we've asked a lot of detailed and poignant questions, at least I think, about special teams to these players. Of, you know, it seemed like a couple years ago on the power play, for example, we had multiple players say, it just gets in your head. You almost don't want a power play because you're like, there's no way we're going to score, or we're going to force things and then we're going to allow a shorthanded goal. And so I would hope that, you know, there's a small amount of confidence that's been restored a little bit. Still a long way to go, 50 games or so to, you know, correct this pretty terrible start, to be frank. But, you know, any improvement is some. And then on the other side, you need to be able to score on your power play as well. And you've seen the Predators maybe make too much use of Philip Forsberg cutting off the half wall and taking that shot, which has been so lethal again for him this year. It's worked a few times. And I think over these last few games, you started to see sprinkling in into the strategy a couple different options. We've seen Duchesne on that bumper play next to the net. He was rotated out, so that changed. You also saw that then freed up a cross ice pass, which is always, of course, you know, a top chance that you normally can't get at a 5-on-5, but you should be able to get when you've got the extra man on the ice. So I started to see evidence of that. I'm encouraged by that. And this is going to be a whole season battle. I think we know that. When you have a start like you did on the penalty kill in Dallas, when you have, conversely, you know, an inability to score power play goals, I think, what was it, five games? No, in the third game of the season, they had one. So five games in, they had one goal on the power play, Arvidsson against Carolina. So trying to rebound from that, it's going to be a topic that, unfortunately, the Predators players are going to have to answer all season long from national media of, you know, talk to me about this. But if you see that small improvement, I think that's encouraging. And of course, all you can do is try to get better, try to make changes, you know, try to get that way. And I think I would hope at least that seeing some better signs from these last two games, a team in Chicago, you're still going to play six more times to be better against their good power play, you know, to show some more, at least good chances on the man advantage yourself. That's encouraging. I think that only helps when you rematch with them. Before we know it, it'll be happening again.
Let's get to a couple sound bites real quick. And Thomas, you mentioned the tweet that we had from our friend Papa Pierogi, who said, gosh, those Dallas games, not very low scoring. So he actually asked, he said, what do we think about this team right now? Give me something positive. And I think these two will do it. So first, Ryan Ellis was asked after the win on Wednesday about what he has seen change in these first 2 weeks. What has stuck out to him that's maybe different about this team than in years past? And the work ethic is what sticks out to the associate captain.
I think work ethic. I think the last couple of years we've had skill, we've had individual talent, individual performances. But overall, I think it's the work ethic that this group has. And that's always been Nashville Predator hockey. I mean, we're blocking more shots than we ever have. We're working hard. We're doing the right things, and we're not always rewarded for them. But there's a lot of trust building in that room between guys, and it's a good feeling in that room right now.
So there's Ryan Ellis, who is always insightful with his thoughts and has been around this team as long as just about anyone else in this organization and this roster. So he's encouraged by what he is seeing from that point of view. And then I wanted to get to this one too, from head coach John Hines. It's a little bit long, but I think it's a good answer on just what's different about his team this season and what is he noticing through these first 2 weeks.
I think it's been a combination, Kayla, in the sense that I think the returning players that have been here, you know, they had a sour taste in their mouth from the last couple of years, particularly last year. We've had a lot of, like we said, I mean, we tried to really spend a lot of time, to, even during the pauses, talking about these things and figuring out what it is. And I think there's been a recommitment from the players that have been here in the past. They want to win. They're proud guys. They know that behavior needed to change, culture needed to change. And they've taken it upon themselves as returning players to do that and change themselves in their behaviors and their attitudes and their habits and work ethic. And now you've added other players into the team, and they've brought that. They brought a freshness. You know, we tried to go after players that were hard to play against, mentally tough, talented. And now I think it's, you know, there's just a bit of a combination that it wouldn't matter if the returning players didn't change what they were doing and their mindset and behaviors, and you added new players into the group, it still wouldn't work. And then if we didn't bring the right players in and our players that were returning didn't change, it wouldn't be what it is. And you know, we've had a strong emphasis on work ethic, commitment, mental toughness, staying with things. And, you know, to date, we've done that. And we've kind of run the gamut here this year. We've had good games and won, good games and lost, bad games and lost. But it's about how you grow as a team, and you continue to peck away at points and build your game and build your identity and build your culture. You know, that's what you want throughout a season, to be successful.
So you heard it there from John Hines as well. And I think that that's something that we've noticed throughout the, I say throughout as if we've been going at this a long time. We're still only seven games in, but you're going to have good games. You're going to have bad games, especially in the early going. I think everyone goes through kind of that 10 game stretch where it's, you might not really know what you're going to get on any given night. And it's about building that culture and that identity, as John Hines says. And we're getting a little tight on time as per usual in this first segment. But Thomas, I'm just wondering what you've seen, and especially hearing from Ryan Ellis and hearing from John Hines in their comments. I really think it's kind of quite interesting in saying that, you know what, we brought all these new guys in. It's a breath of fresh air, and they've done good things. But it wouldn't matter if the guys who were still here weren't changing the way that they go about things too.
And I have to identify a bit of my own bias here. So, of course, I watched the games on TV when you went to Dallas. But we, in this new weird circumstance, have legitimately front row seats for the games when they're in Nashville. So I feel like I've seen a slightly different team, in that I've seen a team that's 4-1, you know, playing at Bridgestone Arena, you know, firsthand. And I can really notice more intricacies. I'm right there in front of it. And so because of that, perhaps being more of the team I've seen, or I hope, you know, that it is an actual thing, like, just the work ethic really is there. The commitment really is there. I mean, a lot of these changes that we've been told about on personnel specifically all summer long, they kind of seem to be making a difference. And I know I looked to you a couple of times and was like, Nick Cousins, for example, I think I brought him up before, he finally gets his first goal, but I mean, he'd hit the post, he'd had a breakaway. And I was like, that's a player that, you know, hasn't been here before. And he's now helping that line. And I think the Predators may have really found something. I believe it was Cousins, Granlund, and Duchesne toward the end of that second game against Chicago. And like, that's not a mix. That's not a look that we were able to have last season. I've really liked the way that that's done. And the Johansson line on the first, has gotten close. I think there's room for improvement there, but I think they're just a couple plays away from being good. And so outside of that, though, you've changed the rest of your lineup. I mean, you had Luke Cunningham come in and just have a whole different, you know, attitude and get two goals in two games. You've had, you know, your defense, you're so deep right now, a lot because of a lack of injuries and being early in the season, but you're so deep right now that it's like, oh, okay, maybe we sit Borowiecki tonight. Well, then we have Tenorti come in and he plays well, or we had Matt Benning sit and we had Lucas Pisa come in, and then you're seeing some of that on the forward unit as well. So they've won the games that they have to win, and they've lost some that you would have liked to have won, but you know, maybe a better opponent in Dallas. So I don't want to go too far down that, but I really have liked what I've seen, and I really think I am starting to see a team, like Hines said, that the core couldn't change. You're gonna have the Joe Fillion, you're gonna have Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi, I mean, for years, that's how you've set up your team. So they had to make a change as well. And, or this wouldn't have worked with this influx of, you know, new players and a new mentality, but I think that they have. And I think you're seeing results so far. And at the very least, you're seeing, like, and I'll close with this, but the first game against Chicago, you're losing, it's 2-1 in the third period, and you're like, okay, come on. Like, are they not going to be able to score a goal? But it was one of those classics where when the Predators were really good and when the Predators have had bad years, where you really could look at an effort and be like, no, they stuck with it on the shots. They stuck with it on their system. And you really believe that we may run out of time here, but I'm willing to bet that if this continues for 60 minutes, they're going to find the tying goal. They're going to find the way to win. And in that instance, they did. Hockey's fickle. It's not always the case. But I think in years past, you haven't seen that. In years past, maybe you're down 2-1 and you're like, okay, this is probably over. It's probably not going to happen. So for that, fewer than 10 games in, I'm encouraged.
Two tidbits that I've heard as of late. One, it's a breath of fresh air in that locker room. And two, this team is closer than we have been in years past. Those coming from players, that is not a bad thing here in the early going. A big road trip coming up to Florida this week, as you mentioned, too, in Tampa Bay on Saturday and Monday, and then across the state to Sunrise, Florida, and the Fort Lauderdale area against the Panthers on Thursday and Friday of next week before the Preds come back home to Smashville. Coming up next, we will talk to the man in charge in Smashville. Predators president and CEO Sean Henry will join us next. This is the Predators official podcast presented by Two Rivers Ford on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hi, I'm Matt Duchesne, and most of you know I'm a husband, father, proud Nashville Predator, and a huge music fan. But what you might not know is that I'm also a total Ford guy, and my dealership is Two Rivers Ford. I chose Two Rivers because they're honest, upfront, and easy to do business with. They also have non-commissioned salespeople, which is great. I figured when a local business has been around for almost four decades, they must be doing something right, eh? So if you're ready for a new Ford, definitely go see my friends at Two Rivers Ford.
Predators official podcast presented by Two Rivers Ford here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to episode 117. Brooks Bratton, Thomas Willis of Preds.com. Max Herz produces our radio show. And we are excited to be joined now, and we speak to him in other mediums virtually, but it's been a little while since we've had him on the podcast, so we're excited to have Predators president and CEO Sean Henry join us. Sean, how are you, and how excited and happy are you to have hockey back in your life again?
Well, I'm doing well. I'm shocked. This is your 117th show, and it's only the second time I've been on, I think. And to answer your last question, like you guys, I am ecstatic. It's just, we all know how much we missed it. We know how good we felt at, you know, the early practices and training camp and then the scrimmages. But that first game we had, it just felt so good. And then, the past two nights having some, new fans in the building too, or old fans, if you will, it was amazing what it did for all of us, wasn't it? It's just so good.
It's definitely a boost. We can attest to that. I hope this isn't only the second time, though. I know we've discussed.
Well, I think it's the third time. I was going to go third time.
All right.
I was actually going to check the math and see how many times three divides into 117, or I guess the opposite of that, but you know.
Well, it's 2.4%.
No, it's not.
That's how often.
I was about to say, it's not the best odds, but you know, yeah. We'll get there.
There's always room for improvement. Well, Sean, you mentioned you get two wins. You said to me the other day before we played, you're like, we'll be fine. We'll win both of them. They do. And the Predators also get some fans back in the building. So what has it been like, especially in the last little bit, is not only we've prepared to get back on the ice, but then it actually does happen. The puck drops and you're able to welcome back some familiar faces as well.
Yes, as you know, I mean, you've been in the center of so much of it. So much work has been done by everybody. I don't care who you are in our organization or with the Metro government or in our league. So many people had to come together just to get our doors open for our team to practice, let alone host the game, and then obviously add fans in. So it's been pretty rewarding to be working on something so hard for the past 5 or 6 months. As you know, we build so many protocols and plans just to change them and change them and change them and change them, to make sure that we're building the best procedures and protocols that we can based on today's science and today's knowledge, knowing that we're going to learn something new tomorrow and we might have to change something. And it's been so nice to have the support of our fans and our partners saying, let's just do what's right. of course, everyone wants to be in the building. You know, you have 50,000 people that would love to jam the building. You want every partner there sampling, having their tables open, meeting and greeting people. But people know that's not something we can do right now. So they're being so patient and supportive. It's been so nice. And it's a shame that we only had, you know, 700, 800 extra people there the past few nights. But the people that couldn't make it, we're still really excited to have the game back. And that's nice to hear. And we're going to expand from that 800 people to a little bit more than that for the next set of games and a little bit more so again. And probably get up to about 2,500 people going into the SEC tournament if things continue to progress the way they are now.
Sean, I often joke that if people only heard some of the things we legitimately talk about in meetings, that we have to, that things that you wouldn't have to think about but have to be discussed when you're running a professional hockey team and all the concerts and shows that come into Bridgestone Arena as well. But if you will, peel back the curtain for our listeners a little bit. What are some of the things that you've dealt with to get this season happening that you maybe would never have imagined? I can't believe that this is a question I'm having to answer or something I'm having to ponder to make this, strange, but, unique 2021 season happen.
Well, just very egocentrically driven for a minute. I mean, because that's how we're all driven. And, one of those two thumbs and loves himself, that's me right here. When we got the last set of protocols, when we're all putting ourselves in different groups, right? Group one, group 1A, group two, 2A, 2B, 2C. I mean, there were so many levels of groups, to isolate our players and our training staff and then our coaches and hockey operations and on out. I am in a group, as you guys know, I joke about it, by myself. Michelle Kennedy and I, we're both in it, but we're not allowed to be in the same room together. And I am missing the thing I love most about our games and events, and that's seeing people and interacting, having fun, and hearing about, births and marriages and what they're most excited about with that game and why tonight is special. And I remember when I saw that last set of protocols, and I think you were in that meeting or Zoom call when we were going through the, 16 volumes of protocols as were our, what we thought was our final set. And obviously we've changed it a few times already. And I slowly came to the realization that I'm going to have to sit by myself or with my family at least and not interact with the crowd. And that was the one that I really thought, how are we even here? Who am I being protected from? Or more importantly, who's being protected from me? That I can't come near them. But you realize we have so much redundancy in the planning that we're staged there. Something were to happen or there's an outbreak, then different, people can swoop in and take on different roles. So that was one that hit a little bit hard. The other is David Poyle and I were talking back in December-ish, and, we have 8, 9, 10, 11 new players, depending on how you look at it. And at that point, between us, we only met one person in person. At that time. And that's really bizarre. It's always fun to meet with the new players, whether they're young or more established with their family, figure out where they're coming from, what's important to them, why Nashville's unique for them, and didn't get a chance to do that this year. And again, I don't know why that was a shock to me based on the fact that we're building towards that day since last June, but it was very, very different, very unique to not be able to be together as a unit because it's what we all enjoy. We have two new assistant coaches that I've only been on conference calls and Zoom calls with, which, again, is just a bizarre thing. And it's I like hanging out with Pete Rogers in the equipment room. You like seeing what the new guys, eccentricities are and what do they like to do from an equipment standpoint. And you're missing that. But then again, we're all missing a lot right now. But the common thing that we have is this game in front of us right now in maybe a different way to view it, but at least it's here.
Sean, one of the other, I suppose, more noticeable visual changes are what some of the sponsor integration and some of the new elements that we have. We have a Bridgestone logo on our helmets, on the gold and the white jerseys, and you've got sponsor logos on tarps that are covering up the first 10 to 15 rows of seats. What has it been like from that perspective and just finding different ways to operate and different elements to incorporate in a season that is simply unlike any other?
Well, I've said this a few times, but this is something that I think we're going to enjoy for a long time. And through so much, so many challenges and disassociation from our fans and our partners and each other have created so much creativity of saying, okay, what do we do to further align our partners? How do we bring them into our game more? How do we recover some revenue? Being very, very candid. How do we, deliver certain things that we used to deliver in new ways? And I think the real positive of that is going to be years and years from now, the collaboration from team to team, within teams and throughout the league has been incredible. And, you know, we all work together pretty well. We compete on the ice, not so much in the offices. But we say that, but in reality, we do compete there as well. And while we share ideas, there's always a little holdback, if you will. The past 6 or 7 months, we've all come together to figure out, you know, what are some of the best practices? What are some of the ideas that we've thought about but we've never done before? And I think we had a chance to, you know, play with some things this year. And, you know, I think the helmet ads are tremendous. You know, you're going to really your anchor partners to put them on the most prominent, you know, piece of what you see. And that's, you know, on our players. You know, so for us, of course, that was easy with Bridgestone. It was great that they wanted it as well. But then, you know, a lot of other things, you know, the blue line ads, if you will. For years, we've done that for some fan messaging or announcing the playoffs or the comeback. And they were in the ice and non-changeable. Where now, you know, you're scrolling through, they're non-offensive, they pop. You could see that continuing and maybe even becoming part of the broadcast with more than just partners coming to life. Maybe it's different game stats or maybe it's, you know, the player and puck tracking fancy stats that can fall down in that area too. So as we're discovering new ways to integrate our partners into things, you're looking at new ways to, you know, bring that broadcast to life too. And it has been fun. And, you know, we've all played with it differently. And, you know, from the fan cutouts and having some unique fun with Mars Pet Care, for example, to, you know, obviously the very blatant signage placements on the edge of the glass. It's really been fun to collaborate with so many different people to come up with where we are. And some of these are going to be winners that last forever. And some of these things we'll look back and say, ah, maybe that didn't work that well.
Our guest here on the Preds Official Podcast, presented by Two Rivers Ford, is Predators President and CEO Sean Henry. And I still want to ask you this question, even though, frankly, you sort of answered it toward the end of your last response there. But I think so much of the last 12 months of our lives have been, I can't wait till we get back to normal, to, you know, this is the way it used to always be. And yes, there's a big part of that. And like you mentioned earlier, I think we're starting to see that with looks like more fans coming back inside Bridgestone Arena. But what are some things that you think, like, no, this is going to stay and this should stick and this should continue? I mean, like, broadcasts are looking different than they ever have before. The connection in some ways, at least virtually, between, you know, fans and this team, that's changed as well. So what are a few things that you're like, you know, I don't need to always focus on what's going to be back to normal and that will be great when it happens. But what are some things that, like, yeah, this should stay? I'm glad that we had perhaps this jump forward a few years into the future out of, you know, necessity to make these changes, and now they should stick around.
Yeah, and out of every tragedy, and I'm not making light of all the pain and suffering so many people have had, but out of every pain that we suffer, there are certain things you discover that are better, though you were forced into them. We're just playing hockey. I get that. But for us, and focus on that for a moment, I think there are a lot of things that now you look at and think that it's incredible. There's no way in the world we could do a broadcast without sending the broadcasters to the venue, right? I mean, how could that ever happen? Let's not even talk about it. Well, that's exactly what we did in the summer. And it was a little rough around the edges, but it worked out pretty well. Now, when you look at where we are from a broadcast standpoint, you have 7 broadcasters all in the same venue, our home venue, for all games. And they get to do some things we don't normally, you know, get to do because you lose time traveling. You know, you're in a temporary setup in a new building. You're not sure what the access is going to be. And I think in on the fly, Bob Cole and our entire broadcast team have done a great job in telling a slightly different story with the guys being distant, if you will. Can you imagine when you break down the barriers and they could all be together, but maybe still being in Nashville for all games? I mean, there's a chance that maybe broadcasters don't travel ever again. I don't know if that'll happen, but if it doesn't, we could probably build some things that are absolutely incredible, no matter what's going on in our building. So, I mean, that's one. Internal meetings. I mean, you know, Thomas, you and I have been in more meetings together in the past year than we were in the past 5 years before that, and it's a little bit easier. I mean, maybe not always fun for you. Yeah. It always is for me. But we are connecting by being apart, you know, more often. Now, we all have a little Zoom fatigue. We all have a little hiccups. You're tired of that email to clarify something where you normally walk down the hall. But I do think we've all gotten a lot closer, both in the building and externally, to our partners and fans by being apart. There are things that can continue. You know, our Meet the Team event that we've done, you know, for 22 years with the franchise, it was always literally face-to-face. And as the fan base has grown, when we got to 14,000 season tickets, it wasn't the same as it was in 1998 when there was literally 2,000 season tickets. Well, now, because of Zoom, you have different people jump in and out of things and get a lot more personal and truly meet the team and not just get autographs. So maybe there's something there as well. But there are a lot of opportunities, I think, for everyone to get a lot closer to what we all love, despite being further apart. So I don't know where it'll all go, but there are certain aspects that have been good, to your point. And it'll be interesting to see how it continues to evolve. But I remember, and you were part of it, Errol Brooks went to the bubble in Edmonton, and I don't know how great or negative that experience was completely, but when we first started talking about the broadcast, it was like, this can't happen. You cannot broadcast a game from Nashville when it's being played in Edmonton. But we did, not as many as we wanted to, but exactly what happened. And I think our two road games already this year have shown how good it could be.
Sean, let's end on this. And I know you don't have a crystal ball, and so much depends on the progression of the virus and the vaccine rollout and everything that comes along with that. But do you have a vision for how the next 6 months to 1 year could look as far as hosting events and fans in the building, or just how do you see the future in that sense for what's to come and what could be back in Bridgestone again at some point soon?
You know what? I do have a crystal ball. I'm looking at it right now. Just nothing's coming through. So maybe I got to sharpen my skills. You know what? I don't know. The one thing that should never surprise any of us is the ingenuity of our country, of the world. And, you know, the vaccine came about much faster than most people thought it could. The deployment of it is having its own hiccups right now, but again, we're deploying the vaccine faster than I think any of us thought we could in our normal world 5 years ago, let alone when this thing started a year ago. So you hope that continues to accelerate. And if we stay on what people think could be generated and this becomes a little bit more commonplace come June, July, August, September, you can see us returning to some normal crowd sizes in time for training camp. And it just could align really well for our own season, for the comeback of concerts and shows, and we all want that. Even with that, though, we're still probably going to be practicing, some distancing and then some protocols that probably last for a while, because the full vaccination probably won't be finished for, I hate to say it, a year or two or maybe even three. There are going to be some people that can't get it. There are going to be some people that choose not to get it. And that choose not to get it, we have to really figure out, because we know that we can host large events when people are wearing their masks and or are vaccinated. And, we're trying to round out what those conversations look like. There'll be some legal opinions weighing in on that as well. But I do think come next season, we're going to be at crowd sizes that we're a little bit more used to, and that'll be fun. The exact details on how to get there, I think we have to continue to flesh out. But I think it will follow mass vaccinations and mass acceptance of masks. I've said mass or masks a lot in that sentence. So if you can source that and edit it, I'd appreciate it.
No problem. We'll do our best.
You got me nervous when you didn't laugh at the end. I mean, gosh, I thought it was a pretty funny line, but no.
That's what's so tough about Zoom. You got to unmute and then laugh and then mute yourself again because you don't want to talk over the person. It's a whole thing. That's, one more thing that's changed.
It is a
we promise we were muted, but we found it entertaining.
Well, thank you guys.
Well, Sean, we always appreciate the time, and as we said, there's a bit of a light at the end of the tunnel coming, and I think we're already seeing that with games in our building and some fans as well. So thanks again. We know you've got a lot going on, and we look forward to having you on again and getting our ratio a little bit better with these 117 episodes.
I look forward to it. Right now I'm good at every 52 or so episode drafting on. So I'll see you guys in about a year, maybe for St. Patty's Day of 22.
3 or 4%. We'll see.
Thanks, Sean.
Guys, thank you so much. See ya.
Go
You're listening to the Preds Official Podcast, presented by Two Rivers Ford on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app. For more about the show, go to nashvillepredators.com/podcast. We got a new logo this week for the show, and we'll have a new intro very soon. So again, super excited to have Two Rivers Ford alongside. And thanks to those of you who noticed the new logo, liked it. And you can't figure it out. It's a hockey rink into a microphone. You know, I'm being facetious there, but the Preds graphics team is great at what they do, and they helped us design that. You and I even took new promo photos recently to be able to put up on Fang Vision for the home games to promote the show. So we won't be able to fake it. We will have to admit that we are 2 to 3 years older than when we originally took those photos, but now we have to.
I was just going to say, it's always fascinating to see when we take a new photo like that, just compare it to the old ones. Like, gosh, this job really ages us in a good way, but we're just more refined. We can't say though that we're going to age as perfectly as the Swedes and the Finns do.
Nope, not even close, unfortunately. So it might be a long, dark road ahead, but anyway, so yeah, we'll only continue to build and get better. And so here we are.
Indeed. All right. Welcome back to the show. We did want to mention, by the way, Preds goaltender Connor Ingram. He voluntarily entered the NHL's player assistance program earlier in the week. Goaltender Kazimir Kaskasuo has joined the taxi squad in Nashville as a result of that. But we wanted to wish Connor all the best as he gets the help he needs. There's a great track record of some former Preds players who have also reached out and taken advantage of this program. So tough to hear, but certainly glad that Connor has reached out and will get some assistance there. So all the best to him. He's a big part of the future, and we hope to see him back here in Nashville real soon. We also wanted to mention former Preds defenseman Yannick Weber signed a one-year deal in Pittsburgh. Remember, he was here on a pro tryout during training camp after being here for the past four seasons. Wanted to say best of luck to him as well. We always appreciated his thoughtful and insightful answers. Honestly, one of the best quotes on the team, and an underrated quote for sure, when we had the chance to talk to him, and also did a great job representing the team as their rep for the Players Association. So played a key role in this summer. We talked about that with him and just what he had been doing, kind of facilitating what is the return to play going to be like, what do the players need to do. So all the best to Yannick. He had a good run here in Nashville. We certainly enjoyed having him and getting to know him. So good luck to former number seven in Pittsburgh.
And then back to and briefly on the NHL player assistance program, we've had Predators players have success from that very thing. So Austin Watson, Jordan Tutu, we've talked about them even on the show. We're able to interview both of them about it. So all the best to Connor Ingram, and we just hope, assume, and expect him to be the next success story out of that. So good for him for doing that. And now let's dive into your experience in Dallas and my experience in Dallas. So I remained in the group, the hockey ops group, if you want to call it that, or the event level group, as we've joked, you know, again, getting daily tested. So I was just as curious, and you detailed what you went through and are going to share it now, but I was like, so did you get tested, or when did you get tested? But I was still back here in Nashville, also still getting tested every day and going through, like, the taxi squad, you know, stayed behind and did the same thing. And so we had to set up our timing there. So I would still go to Bridgestone Arena and do that part of it. But then this was Nashville's first time in these protocols. And I think we've seen a lot of it, especially in the NHL news about the Washington Capitals, for example, or more things have come out. This is a public document. If you are that curious, you can go and you can read what all the rules and restrictions are for, you know, making sure that this 2021 season happens for keeping players safe. But you got to live it firsthand and for the first time in Dallas.
Sure. Well, and again, you and I, the reason that we're even doing this show virtually is because we are both in that group, that 2A group with the Predators that is around the team and players and coaches, not 24/7, but certainly enough to have some access there. So as you said, I did travel with the team to Dallas. A bit of a different experience than we're used to. Some of it's the same and some of it's different. A lot of it honestly reminded me of the bubble in Edmonton when we traveled there in late July of 2020 to head up there for what ended up being a couple of weeks. But we're a little more out in the open. There's no fence around the hotel this time like there was in Edmonton. So there certainly is some risk involved, but everybody did a great job following protocols and doing what they have to do to try to stay safe and healthy during this time. So we're all wearing our masks on the flight, unless we're eating. All meals on the plane are individually packaged to cut down on preparation from flight attendants. And NHL protocols actually ask players and staff not to eat at the same time as someone else in their row, just trying to limit any sort of potential interaction without a mask on in that sense. So it was just different too when we arrived in Dallas on Thursday. Most players and myself and some training staff and coaches, we would all check into our rooms and probably head out for dinner at a local restaurant and in our different groups that we typically hang out with. But instead, dinner time comes in the meal room at the hotel. So that is something that is different. The players always have breakfast and lunch in a meal room in the hotel. That wasn't different. That was something that was unchanged from the typical experience. But yeah, it was a bit different walking down to get your meal in that sense as well. And there is a player's lounge, so guys can kind of hang out. There's some television, some PlayStations, and areas to relax, which other than that, you can't leave your hotel room, right? So there's just that that you have to get used to. And we are getting tested every morning as well. There are folks that are traveling with us who are testing us, who are staying with us the whole time. So you start your day with a COVID test, which is a temperature check and a nasal swab, so we can continue to monitor that, of course. And then I think a lot of it is just common sense and continuing to practice what we've all learned how to do over the last 10 or 11 months and just staying socially distanced. The meals are in a large ballroom. There's only 4 seats per table, so guys can kind of spread out and not be too close to each other. Buses, you're only allowed to have 50% capacity on a bus when you're heading from the airport or to the rink. And of course, plenty of hand sanitizer. Everyone's wearing their mask when they're not on the ice or exercising. So again, it's a different look for sure, but the light at the end of the tunnel, I think, is keeping a lot of people going. And Coach Hines has stated that the team is going to look for ways to keep morale up on the road going forward, because adjusting in Dallas was a challenge. And I don't want that to sound like people are complaining like, oh my gosh, we're still in this nice hotel, our life is so hard. That's not the case. But I just think it boils down to all of our lives have changed so much in the last little bit. And this is just one more example of it. For your entire career, no matter what role you serve, you're used to the road being a certain way. And all of a sudden that has been completely changed. So I think that's just going to take some getting used to for the Preds. So I don't want to say that that's why, you know, there was an issue on the ice in Dallas. I don't think that really correlates to it. But it's just a different experience. And I think it's something that everybody's going to have to get used to over the next few months.
And in closing, it's an oversimplification, but you and the NHL, and so us, we are facing even more stringent rules than what we are used to under stringent rules, meaning like you can't even go to a restaurant, even though you could go to a restaurant with a mask normally and be socially distanced. The NHL has said, no, let's go even further. Let's not risk that. And secondly, and finally, the purpose of that is, there will be situations when a player tests positive, and then if you're able to limit the contact tracing or all that, the games can still go on. The whole team can still play. And we've seen that. I know, I think it's fresh of mind. Oh, well, the Hurricanes just had their game postponed against Nashville. Yes, that was an extreme case. There are instances almost every night where a player tests positive or is exposed. He gets put on the COVID list. The game is still able to play. The team is still able to go on. So that's the goal. That's why you put all of this out there. So ultimately, even in perhaps one of the toughest years possible, we're able to play a 56-game season, and we're able to award the Stanley Cup in July, not in our normal June, but yes, that'll come up soon. So also coming up soon, segment 4 of the show. We've got your Twitter questions from the week. We appreciate those. We'll answer all of those. We'll also read some of your 5-star reviews. So thanks for leaving those. That's all next on the Preds Official Podcast, presented by Two River Sports. Predators Official Podcast, presented by Two Rivers Ford, back alongside for our 4th and final segment. Brooks is now doing remixes or covers of popular songs.
We've reached that, and
we're that deep into your music repertoire.
I love a good cover. That's, of course, Waterfalls, made hugely popular by TLC in the 90s, which like amazing original version. Don't get me wrong, sure. But I love a good cover. Death Cab for Cutie, one of my favorite bands, and I think they did a great job with this one. So
enjoy.
I'll always go for a version of Waterfalls because it's a fantastic song, first and foremost.
All right, I'm going to read our latest 3 5-star reviews. That's our guarantee here on the Preds Official Podcast, presented by Two Evers Ford. You leave us a 5-star review, we will find it, we will read it. I will admit we're biased towards Apple Podcasts just because that's where most of our downloads come from. So if you leave one in some obscure place, you might have to tweet us and let us know. But quickly, we had one from CPT Phil. This was just before Christmas. This made me laugh. He said, when we were talking about Joyful, Joyful, he thought we said, Jofa, Jofa, we adore thee. So thank you for that. That was pretty good. And then Saved by Grace 02, just 2 weeks ago, said, Brooks and Thomas and the crew do such a great job with this podcast. The content is current, informative. You guys, I can tell you guys genuinely enjoy talking about hockey. She goes on. It's a great long review. Appreciate that. Thank you. And then our other one, Winchester Vol. I love this. I mean, I couldn't tell you what my screen name is on Apple, so I love these. And he or she said, I've been listening since the first episode and can't believe I haven't written a review. This podcast is hands down the best. If you want to keep abreast of all things Nashville Predators, I enjoy the player interviews and getting behind the scenes tidbits.
And the giveaway, you know, like the cherry on top of a delicious sundae, which we haven't done a giveaway in a while, but glad to know they're still appreciated.
There you go. Yeah. Well, sorry. And then the second review went on to say, love that they take fan questions and top-notch podcast. Well, here we go. We're about to take fan questions. Look at that transition. So,
for the reviews, by the way, we appreciate your listeners.
Yes, it really does matter. It lets other people listen to the show. It lets us know what you like and what you don't. So we super appreciate that. Thanks for doing that. And then, yes,
I spoke to a student yesterday from Belmont named Madison, a loyal listener as well. So shout out Madison.
Man, this has become the shout out section of the show. So why not? If you use hashtag Preds Podcast, primarily on Twitter, we will see your questions and we'll do our best to answer them. We've got several this time, so I think we're going to run long on the podcast only version of the show. And so here we go. Tim wants to know, one thing that interests me is the production of the new guys versus the old guys. And I think he means like former player or, you know, more longer roster tenured players, not necessarily old players. He says Forsberg and Yossi notwithstanding. Wondering what that means and if it will give the Preds a needed morale boost. We touched on that a bit in the first segment.
Yeah, I think a little bit of that goes back to John Hines and what he said about not only have the new guys come in and done essentially what you would have expected from a Nick Cousins, a Brad Richardson, Borowiecki, and Benning so far. But, and you heard Ryan Ellis say it, I think too, it's a different feeling in that locker room now. And I think it has given, if you want to call them the older Preds, the guys who have been here for a little bit longer, it has given them a needed morale boost. And there has been some talk that, yes, guys like Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson would probably like to have a bit more production than they have to this point. But honestly, when you get down to it, the overall results trump anything that is not going maybe right individually for guys. And I think that'll come. I mean, I think you've just got to rely and trust and believe that your top players are going to be those top players more often than not. Everybody has off nights. But even for Duchene, I think scoring in the shootout last night, yes, it doesn't necessarily go into his true stat column as far as scoring a goal, but that doesn't hurt your confidence either. And I just think again that you've got to believe that these guys are going to continue to produce or start producing with more regularity as you go along in the season, as they get more comfortable and settled into this new landscape that we're all in as well.
Next, Josh asks, why do special teams need a lot of work continuously? I think we've probably all wondered or pondered on that at different points, not only this season, but in years past. Two caveats before I give at least my answer. Number one, I think the teams that consistently, let's say, have a great power play for what, 3 years, 5 years in a row? Pretty infrequent. I mean, that really doesn't happen for many. And I've found, even for me, I may think of a team as having a great power play, and then I'll actually check the stats. I'm like, oh, actually, they're like 12th or 17th this year. You know, like you might even think in your mind, oh, yeah, they're a top five power play every year. And that's pretty infrequent. That pretty rarely happens. So I would offer that caveat, but agree. The Predators, what, 5 to 7 years ago, they had a top power play. It has gone down, and we've seen the frustration of it. I think the worst was 2 years ago in the 18-19 season. So it's been better than that. But I think one thing that the Predators face is they do not have as much as some teams have of like a signature play ability or move that some have that then frames their power play. And I'm going to use that to say that. So we saw Shea Weber, for example. Everybody knew about his slap shot. Yeah, that worked for a time. But then that was, unfortunately, what the Preds power play became. That's all it was. It was, let's do a one-timer from the point from Shea Weber. And it worked for a while, and then teams figured it out. And so, like, even though they've had those moments of, like, this, here's something that one player can do better than, you know, maybe the rest of the league, or rather better than a large portion of it, even that will get figured out. And so I think you saw the Predators power play go through a time where they were shooting too much from the point. Their defensemen were some of the best in the league, so it just made sense. Well, PK Subban shoot. We'll have Roman Josi shoot. They've adjusted from that. I think with some of the newer personnel changes, especially this year and especially the last 3 years or so, the guys on the power play have changed probably more than you might think. And I think Nashville's still trying to find exactly what those areas of competitive advantage are. So back to my point in the first segment, they've got the Philip Forsberg shooting from the half wall, but are they leaning on that too much? You know, so what's the thing on the other side, or what's the thing at the point? And I still think with coaching and personnel adjustments, they're trying to figure out what that is. So I think it's just going to be a process, frankly. I think it's going to take time. And like anything that's difficult, as soon as you figure something out and get better, well, yeah, by the way, the guys on the other side of the ice, they've got video and coaching, and they're trying to stop you.
And the perils of doing the podcast at home. I am honestly shocked that this is the first time that we've gotten
close to being done talking.
Kyle wanted us to talk about Mikhail Granlund looking like the hardest working man in hockey. Kyle, I don't disagree with that whatsoever. And I think it was fascinating, and maybe honestly something that was a bit overlooked, is that we were even told last week that, okay, we knew Mikhail Granlund was here. We knew he was starting to practice with the team, but we were told that it was still going to take a little while until he would be into the lineup. We would have to wait a few games. All of a sudden, he comes back on Friday. And, you know, not to discount anything that David Poile and John Hines were saying, but they were like, no, he's not going to play on Friday in Dallas. It's not possible. All of a sudden, he plays on Friday in Dallas. So I think that just speaks to how ready he was. And I think you've seen that on full display. He gets a goal in that second game in Dallas. He gets another one on Tuesday night in Nashville. And I mean, how many chances has he had? He assists on the Josi goal in overtime as well to kind of make that play happen. I think Granlund's been fantastic, and I think he's done everything you could have asked of him to this point. And I think that is just a great showing of what he's capable of. And hopefully that is something that does continue for the Predators, because they will need players like Mikhail Granlund, as we just touched on a moment ago, to certainly produce and drive the bus more often than not. So he's looked great. Hoping to see more of that out of him. Thomas, not the one who co-hosts this podcast, another gentleman with a great name, says, what are some of the advantages and disadvantages to having either a speedy, skilled third and fourth line versus a rough checking third and fourth line? I hear what Thomas is saying, and I think that, and we all know this, like the game has shifted a little bit more in recent years. I would say the last 5 to 10 years or so has kind of shifted from those third and fourth lines traditionally being hard checking, hard to play against. And I think they still are, but you've got to have a little bit more skill now. Like we know, like gone are the days are the one dimensional guys who all they do is fight, right? You've got to have a little bit of skill. And I think Matthew Olivier is a great example of that. And Yakov Trenin, honestly, on that Predators fourth line, we've seen Trenin score a goal. Olivier has the potential to drive a little bit of offense on that line as well, but they're also two of the hardest hitters on the team. And so I think that is kind of the ideal, to me, the ideal third and fourth line these days is, yes, you still want to be a little rough and tumble and tough to play against, but you've also got to have that scoring touch. I think a guy like Nick Cousins is another example of that. Someone who can put chip in on the offense, but he's also going to annoy the heck out of you when you're playing against him too. I think that is the ideal player on those third and fourth lines these days. And I think the Preds have a pretty good balance of that, honestly, up front. And then finally, Ryan says, near the end of the season, when we've played all of the teams at least six times, which team do you think will be most likely to drop the gloves when that first puck drops because we can't stand each other at that point? Ryan, that is a good question, honestly, because I think we're going to see a lot of that. We know the rivalry is there already between Chicago. We know it's there between Dallas, and it's going to pick up against these other teams. Carolina, Columbus, we haven't played Detroit yet. Tampa and Florida are all still to come as well. And it's just a simple fact of the matter. When you see each other, and as games get more intense and more is on the line, you are going to have more intensity, more physicality potentially. And again, when you have guys like Nick Cousins and Mark Borowiecki in your lineup, Brad Richardson, guys are going to get annoyed with them. I think one of the things that Thomas and I have noticed sitting that close to the glass is just how much Nick Cousins talks, and just like every stoppage in play, he's got something to say to someone, and we love it. If you're an opponent, you're like, oh my gosh, just be quiet. I can't stand you anymore. And that is only going to continue to build and build and build as we go along here. So again, of course, gone are the days where you'd have two, three, and four fights a night consistently throughout the league. But it is still something that happens from time to time. And I definitely think that the truculence, to borrow from Brian Burke's vocabulary, will certainly pick up as the season rolls along. So something to look forward to, because I honestly still kind of like the rough stuff. So we'll see if the Predators are able to form any new rivalries in this shortened and realigned Central Division as we go along here. That will do it for episode 117 of the Predators official podcast, presented by Two Rivers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. My fellow Ginger Thomas Willis, you can follow him at Tom A. Willis on Twitter. I am Brooks Bratton. You can follow me at Brooks Bratton on the same platform. And of course, continue to follow at Preds NHL on all social platforms. Thanks so much to Sean Henry for joining us. We always enjoy getting that chat in with him as well. We are on all your favorite streaming and podcast services, of course. Leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on the air. And we always continue to appreciate your listenership. Preds are back at it this week in the Sunshine State, and we will talk to you next week as well. Peace, Nashville.